from the Media Factory in the south end of Burlington, Vermont. This is 99.3 FM, WBTV LP Burlington, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro. Before I get into today's interview, I just want to briefly repeat that I'm doing a book giveaway. You can learn more at my website, shelaughswithoutus.com, at the tab that is labeled hashtag book giveaway. Today on Write the Book, you'll hear an interview that our guest host, Kim McQueen, conducted with author Lori Gottlieb, whose new book is Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. Lori Gottlieb is a psychotherapist. In addition to her clinical practice, she writes the Atlantic's weekly Dear Therapist advice column and contributes regularly to the New York Times. She's on the advisory council for Bring Change to Mind and has appeared in media such as The Today Show, Good Morning America, the CBS Early Show, CNN, and NPR's Fresh Air. Maybe You Should Talk to Someone is a New York Times bestseller, and it is being adapted as a television series. Here's a little information about the book. One day, Lori Gottlieb is a therapist who helps patients in her Los Angeles practice. The next, a crisis causes her world to come crashing down. Enter Wendell, the quirky but seasoned therapist in whose office she suddenly lands. With his balding head, cardigan, and khakis, he seems to have come straight from therapist central casting, yet he will turn out to be anything but. As Gottlieb explores the inner chambers of her patients' lives, a self-absorbed Hollywood producer, a young newlywed diagnosed with a terminal illness, a senior citizen threatening to end her life on her birthday if nothing gets better, and a 20-something who can't stop hooking up with the wrong guys, she finds that the questions they are struggling with are the very ones she is now bringing to Wendell. In Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, Gottlieb invites us into her world as both clinician and patient, examining the truths and fictions we tell ourselves and others as we teeter on the tightrope between love and desire, meaning and mortality, guilt and redemption, terror and courage, hope and change. Kim McQueen spoke with Lori Gottlieb in July. She began by asking Lori to talk about how she was initially inspired to write Maybe You Should Talk to Someone. I hope you enjoy their conversation.
It was definitely not the book I had set out to write. I was supposed to be writing a book about happiness. And the happiness book was making me miserable. The irony was not lost on me that every time I sat down to try to write this book, it was making me depressed and anxious. And, you know, I think that was because at the time I was starting out as a therapist in my private practice, and I felt like the happiness book couldn't capture the richness and the nuance of the human condition in the way that I was so excited by. And I also felt like at a certain point, happiness is beside the point. And I don't mean that we don't want to be happy. What I mean is that happiness as a byproduct of living your life in a fulfilling way is, I think, what we all strive for. But happiness as an end goal is kind of a recipe for disaster. And so I just felt very disconnected from the material. And I was so engaged with what I had the privilege of seeing from my vantage point as a therapist. And so ultimately, I canceled that book contract and I decided that I wanted to bring people into the therapy room to let them see what I got to see. But there was a little hitch in that, which was that at the time that I'm writing about in the book, I follow the stories of four very different patients that I'm seeing. But I was also going through an upheaval in my own life at the same time. And I felt like to position myself as the expert up on high and not share the reality of I actually landed in therapy and was going to therapy at the same time felt disingenuous to me. So I become the fifth patient in the book. And that was the genesis of the way the book ultimately shaped up.
Right, right. I am really struck by when you're talking, you're recounting scenes of talking with patients and you're recounting scenes of beginning to talk to your own therapists and then and friends. And really, at some point, the book starts to be a little dreamy, you know, and you're talking about dreams as a way to really understand what's going on in our minds when we're trying to express it to somebody else. I wanted to ask you to read a passage from the book that I especially like, and it's kind of about this. And I think, and I wonder if you could also talk about the moment in which you're writing this passage and what's going through your mind.
Yeah. So, you know, what I feel like I was hoping to share with the reader is that what we think we're coming into therapy for isn't always what the actual problem is. And what I mean by that is somebody comes in and they have a very specific idea about, you know, here's my situation. And I'm always listening for the music under the lyrics. So the lyrics are, I have a problem with my marriage, or I have a problem with my boss or my child or my parent or whatever it is. And my question always is sort of, you know, what's the music under those lyrics? What is the pattern, the underlying struggle or pattern that got you into this situation and sometimes gets you into situations like this over and over? So I think that, you know, the reader gets to see the evolution of these stories from what they appear to be and, yeah, you know, at face value, and then what they become as people work through them and go in another direction. Yeah. So one of the things, I don't do a lot with dreams, but I think that dreams can give us information. And in the book, in this passage I'm about to read, I talk about the purpose of dreams and how they sometimes give us information we're not yet ready to acknowledge. So I'm going into this question of dreams. It's no surprise that we often dream about our fears. We have a lot of fears. What are we afraid of? We are afraid of being hurt. We are afraid of being humiliated. We are afraid of failure, and we are afraid of success. We are afraid of being alone, and we are afraid of connection. We are afraid to listen to what our hearts are telling us. We are afraid of being unhappy, and we are afraid of being too happy. In these dreams, inevitably, we're punished for our joy. We are afraid of not having our parents' approval, and we are afraid of accepting ourselves for who we really are. We are afraid of bad health and good fortune. We are afraid of our envy and of having too much. We are afraid to have hope for things that we might not get. We are afraid of change, and we are afraid of not changing. We are afraid of something happening to our kids, our jobs. We are afraid of not having control and afraid of our own power. We are afraid of how briefly we are alive and how long we will be dead. We are afraid that after we die, we won't have mattered. We are afraid of being responsible for our own lives. Sometimes it takes a while to admit our fears, especially to ourselves. I've noticed that dreams can be a precursor to self-confession, a kind of pre-confession. Something buried is brought closer to the surface, but not in its entirety. A patient dreams that she's lying in bed hugging her roommate. Initially, she thinks it's about their strong friendship, but later she realizes she's attracted to women. A man has a recurring dream that he's been caught speeding on the freeway. A year into this dream, he begins to consider that his decades of cheating on his taxes, of positioning himself above the rules, might catch up with him.
Yeah, thank you. That's great. I really liked that sort of way into the discussion of what's going on in your own mind when you are talking to your therapist about your present situation. Also, with the background of the material, the stories that you're hearing from the other patients that are in this book, I started to wonder as I was reading, at what point did you know that you were going to write the book that we're reading right now, rather than you were asked to write a parenting book at one point, and then you're asked to write a happiness book at one point? You're sort of juggling this idea of how you're going to represent the conversations that you're having sort of as you're having them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So the book is sort of meta on this level, because the book that people are reading, and here's a big spoiler, you know, is I talk about this struggle in the book.
Right.
And at the end, you know, there's that moment where I do start writing this book, but I don't realize it's going to be a book. So even at the end of the book, you know, when I start writing down my experiences, I'm not thinking this is going to be a book. Mm-hmm. I'm just simply, I had been unable to write at all during that whole period. And I talk about when I was writing the happiness book, you know, I was so ashamed of the fact because I had turned down this parenting book that everybody wanted me to write after I had written this viral cover story for The Atlantic. And then I was supposed to be writing this happiness book. And I felt like, you know, and my agent was at the time was saying, you'll never write another book again if you don't write this happiness book. And you already turned down the parenting book. And I felt like I was making a mess of my writing life and my career. And as a single parent, by the way, who's, you know, the sole provider for the household, it was extremely anxiety provoking. So I didn't, you know, when I canceled the book contract for the happiness book, I really didn't know. I really felt like I would never write another book because that's what I was told. And, you know, and ironically, here we are 11 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's funny because in the book, I write that moment when I can finally just start writing again, just for my own peace of mind, because writing to me is like air. It's like, it's something that I need to do. And later I realized, oh, this is the book that I didn't realize that I wanted to write, that I didn't realize could be a book.
Mm-hmm. You write really well about the entire experience of being expected to write a certain book and not wanting to, and how that plays out in, you know, in your subconscious and all the rest of it. I was really taken by how you sort of characterized that. Like, how long were you in that space of anxiety every day trying to figure out what you were writing?
Oh, I mean, it was a long time. It was like a few years. and I just kept delaying the book deadline and delaying it. And, you know, I say in the book that I was like that closet gambler who gets dressed for work in the morning every day and kisses her family goodbye and goes to the casino instead of the office. You know, I was so ashamed of the fact that I couldn't write this. And, you know, and mostly because I didn't feel connected to the material. Yes. And then finally I do start writing it and I'm like 3/4 of the way done with it, but it just doesn't feel like the book I want to put out. That it's not, you know, because my struggle in the book is all about midlife and meaning and what am I doing in the world? And am I contributing to the world? And I don't just want to put something out there because it's quote unquote commercial. I wanted to put something out that was meaningful and would help people and would help them change their lives. And that's what I was doing in my career as a therapist. And the happiness book felt so, you know, inconsistent with the kind of work that I was doing. So it was really a heart thing and, you know, something about meaning and purpose.
Yeah.
And I struggled with that for so long. And I think, you know, people might say, oh my God, seriously, like that was your problem. You know, that was one of my problems, but it was my problem because I think it reflects a bigger problem that we all have. And I felt like, you know, I say in the book, there's no hierarchy of pain, that pain is pain. This, by the way, was not the only problem I write about in the book. I write about much more significant things, but at the same time, it was a real problem because I think that we all grapple with what is the outside world telling us we need to do and who we need to be and how we need to, you know, present ourselves in the world. And what is it that is really valuable to us and meaningful to us and connects us with the world? And those things were very much at odds with what I was being told and what I felt in my gut that I needed to do. And they were very different things. And how do we listen to ourselves? And how do we quiet those other voices when we know that doesn't feel right?
Yeah. I wondered as I was reading how you did just that, you know, how you were able to quiet all those other voices and sit down and sort of let this book come into being and with it, your own healing. You know, I think I'm asking you how you structure your day to make sure that you have time to give to your patients and your family and also write.
Yeah. I think everybody's different that way. Because I have the practice, I don't have the luxury of just writing when I want to write. And I also write the weekly Dear Therapist column for The Atlantic. So what I like about that kind of writing is there's a deadline and a schedule. There's a weekly rhythm to that column of when you select the letters, when you write the column, when you edit the column. It's all on a very regimented schedule. The book is like, well, you have a year to write it. And that, you know, that can mean a lot of different things.
Yeah.
And your sense of time is different. You know, a year is a lot to kind of hold on to. And so I think with this book, though, it was something that just, because it had been percolating unconsciously in me for so long, and because I had lived the experience, you know, I think it's different maybe if you're writing a novel where you kind of, you know, you have to say, what's the story I'm telling? I knew exactly what stories I was telling. So to me, it was like all I needed to do was put it on paper. And that's what I did. So it wasn't that I had a schedule of writing. It was just that when I did write, it happened very, very quickly. And in fact, in the first draft, you know, one of the things that happened was I was so open about my own experience. You know, I say at the very beginning of the book that my greatest credential is that I'm a card-carrying member of the human race, that helps me the most as a therapist is to use my humanity in the room, not in terms of talking about my own life, of course, but in terms of knowing what it's like to be a person and go through struggles can help me with other people to help them through their struggles. So when I wrote the first draft, I was so raw and open. And, you know, I really thought because I had been told that no one would read this book that, that like three people would read it. So I didn't feel self-conscious about revealing that about myself. And when I gave it to my editor, and she was really pleased with it. And, you know, she had some notes about making sure that all the chapters were in conversation with each other in terms of how I structured it, which is exactly what, you know, what I hope the end result was. But I really, when I went back to do that edit, you know, there was this instinct in me because she and the house were so excited about the book at that point that I thought, oh no, what if people really read this? And so then I thought I better clean myself up. and I realized that you can't do that. That would be a completely, that would defeat the purpose of the book and why even include myself if I'm going to clean myself up. There's no point.
Right.
That my being with patient in the book, if my patients are going to be so vulnerable with me in the book, I needed to be that vulnerable with the reader in the book. And I'm really glad that I didn't beat myself up because I think that that's what resonates with people. That's why people read the book, because they see aspects of themselves mirrored in every single person in this book. And they wouldn't if I had, you know, presented a prettier version of myself.
Right, right. That is a huge thing. I can imagine the struggle to not go back and re-edit maybe a prettier picture of yourself. It must have been difficult to do and require a lot of discipline.
Right. And I think also because I'm a therapist, one might make the assumption that, well, you should see your blind. You shouldn't have the same blind spots, or you should know... Right. You know, these things that clearly the reader can see about me, but I can't see yet at that point in the book, that my therapist can see right away that I'm, you know, kind of thinking, well, what is he smoking? That's not true. Yeah. And yet he's absolutely right. And so, you know, I think there's some, embarrassment around that I'm not just a writer, I'm a therapist and a writer in this book. And, you know, this fear that readers would say, well, how can she be so clueless? She must be really incompetent as a therapist. But I think, you know, of course, as a therapist, I have the vantage point of not living inside the lives of the people that I see. So I can see, you know, it's hard for us to see ourselves up close in that way. Sometimes we need the perspective of an outsider.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I did also want to say that the chapters, I think, do talk very well to each other because we have we have certain threads of your own experience as both as a person and as a therapist in sort of baked into each story of another patient. So it to me, it almost reads like a novel or almost a mystery because I know there's going to be some kind of event at the end of this book that where it actually, I get to see it actually being written and everything ties together really well. I just thought that was, I should throw that in.
Well, thank you. I mean, I think the themes that, you know, I think that the theme, one theme of the book is that we're more the same than we are different. And I think that when you look at these people, you know, all five of us, you know, the four patients and me, we all look very different on the surface from each other in terms of age and gender and history and the problems that we're bringing in and all of that. But, you know, I think the thing is that every single chapter has a theme that, you know, each patient, including me, and I hope the reader relates to that, you know, we're all struggling with sort of these universal questions about, you know, how can I love and be loved? And how do I deal with my mortality? And, you know, what is meaning? What is purpose? You know, why do I keep getting myself into these situations over and over? Why is it so hard to change, even though I know it would be better for me? All of those things that we all grapple with are woven throughout the book in each of these chapters. And I make those connections, I think, for the reader by the way that I position them in the book without pointing them out. So I don't say, hey, and here's this connection between this patient and this other person. It's I think the reader intuitively gets that because of the structure of the book.
Yeah. Yeah. I also liked how you describe interacting with your own therapist. And so I feel like I get, as a reader, I get the benefit of what you are hearing as a patient. And also you're kind of trying to, you know, when you write those scenes with your therapist, it's almost, it's like a professional development. It's like you're learning how this, how your therapist mind works and sort of surmising about that a little bit on the page.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, what's interesting, I think, about that relationship is that he is much more experienced than I am at the time that I go to see him. And I'm learning from him. I'm a patient in the room, but I also feel like in a way it's a mentorship. You know, he would say things that I would then take from my therapy and drive to my office and then repeat for 5 hours straight, you know, with my patients. And it would really be effective with them because, it, you know, there was something about it that was so effective with me. So I think I learned a lot about bringing yourself into the room, bringing your personality into the room. We're trained a certain way. And I think you almost have to you use that as a basis for how you are in the room. But I think then you have to improvise. It's like somebody who's like a classic pianist and then they learn to do jazz and they say, oh, I can use all of those skills that I learned as a classic pianist, but I can also improvise and use these skills, you know, differently as a jazz musician.
Yeah. I wonder if having written this book has subtly influenced how you work with your patients now.
I think the experience of having gone through that therapy has influenced the way I work with my patients tremendously, but I don't think having written the book has. You know, I think the book was an experience of encapsulating what I had learned.
Right.
You know, but so the
that makes
but
sense.
I do think that writing something down does solidify it for you. So in the sense that because I wrote it down, it became more clear to me how I have changed in my work. It probably helped in that way.
Yeah. The book is called Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, A Therapist, Her Therapist, and Our Lives Revealed. Thank you, Lori. It's been really, really fun to talk to you. I absolutely love the book. I think it's really interesting and fun because I want to know what's going to happen to all of the people that you write about in this book.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And thanks for the conversation.
From the Media Factory in the South End of Burlington, Vermont, this is 99.3 FM, WBTV LP Burlington, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. That was an interview that guest host Kim McQueen conducted with the author Lori Gottlieb. You can learn more about her work at lori.gottlieb.com. This week's Write the Book prompt is to try writing something in the second person. You can take a piece you're actively working on and employ another POV narration, point of view narration. You can simply use this as the opportunity for an exercise to see what changes about that piece and what might come to you in a different narration and narrator. Or you can attempt a new story, essay, or poem in the second person. The online journal Electric Literature has a pretty good piece about writing from this unusual point of view. So I'm going to include a link to that in this week's prompt on my Write the Book website. And if you'd like to read it before giving this a go, you can click on there. One thing I'll mention about that article, the author quotes another author as disliking a certain famous second person novel. She says she couldn't get through it. I absolutely loved it. It was Jay McInerney's Bright Lights, Big City. It's famously written in the second person. I thought it was really well done. That's a very short novel. It's a real gem, so I was surprised to read that. Anyway, so I would discourage you from letting that be a turnoff to you, that quote. But anyway, read the article. See what you think on your own if you would like. You may dislike writing in the second person. Some people don't like it. Some people don't like reading it. And you may rush back to your cozy first or third person close narration with renewed relish, but it's all for the best if it's a good exercise for you. Maybe the second person will actually crack open something you couldn't see as you worked before. I hope so. Good luck with your work in the coming week, and tune in next week for another prompt or suggestion. If you're interested in sharing this show with out-of-town friends, let them know that archived episodes of Write the Book are available on iTunes and at writethebook.podbean.com as free podcasts. It's also on Spotify, Google Play, lots of places where you can find podcasts. You can find Write the Book on Twitter and on Facebook for updates. You can access the podcast at my own website, shelaughswithoutus.com. That's also where you can go to look for that tab that's marked hashtag book giveaway. Next week on Write the Book, I'm going to have an interview with the Vermont author Catherine Davis about her wonderful, extraordinary, interesting new novel, The Silk Road, published by Grey Wolf Press. If you have a guest to suggest or comments about the show or news about book-related events, please send an email to writethebook@gmail.com. And if you like the show, do please rate it in iTunes, like it on Facebook, tell all your friends. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro. You've been listening to Write the Book. This is 99.3 FM WBTV LP, Burlington, Vermont. Streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. Have a great week.